In this hour of the show, we'll be talking about investing, something we do on a regular basis here on Focus 580, but this show has a bit of a different focus to it. There seem to be a growing number of Americans who are interested in having their investment decisions line up with their personal, political, social philosophies. We'll talk about how it is possible to do that this morning with our guest. His name is Jack Brill. He's a registered investment advisor, and he has specialized in values-based investing for a number of years now. He's one of the founders of Natural Investment Services, where they serve investors and also provide social research on mutual funds. He is one of the authors of a book that explores this territory. So if you're interested, you can look for it in the bookstore. It's come out recently in an updated edition. It's in paperback. The title of the book is Investing with Your Values, Making Money and Making a Difference, and it's published by New Society Publishers. As I say, it is available in paperback, not terribly expensive, has a lot of basic information there. Of course, as we talk, if you have questions on the topic, you should pick up the phone and call in. You can talk with our guest. Here in Champaign-Urbana, where we are, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line. Good anywhere that you can hear us, around Illinois, Indiana, anywhere the signal will travel. 800-222-9455. And you match the numbers with letters on the phone, you get WILL, 333-WILL, and toll-free 800-222-WILL. Mr. Brill, hello.
Good morning, David.
Thank you for talking with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Before we get into talking in some detail, I guess I'm interested in whether, since you've been dealing this for a while, you can give us some perspective on how it is over, say, the last 10, 15 years, the interest in this kind of investing, whatever you call it, whether you use your term or just use socially responsible investing, whatever, how interest in that kind of investing has grown.
Well, the number of participants and the number of dollars in the industry, the socially responsible investing industry, has significantly grown, and particularly in the last few years. In 1997, for example, a survey by the Social Investment Forum found that there was $1.2 trillion invested in socially responsible portfolio, which was 9% of all professionally managed money, and that was up from $700 million in 1995. And the latest study, which was in 1999, now was over $2.2 trillion. Which represents one in every seven investment dollars. So this is a significant jump. This is like 13% of all investment dollars now have some kind of social interest and social selection as associated with their investments.
Well, probably now we should define our terms a little bit. And let's first of all talk about that one. When people use the term socially responsible investing, what does that mean?
Basically, it's a four-pronged look at investing. One of the things that investors do is avoid investing in things which are abhorrent to them, of issues and companies and products which they do not want to participate in for whatever reason. The other is an affirmative screening. It is selecting companies and industries that they wish to support with their investment dollars. The third leg of what we call the wheel of the natural investment wheel, as we have termed it in our book, is community investing, and that is investing some of the money back into the community to support local communities. And the last spoke of the wheel is shareholder activism. And that is the overt action taken by investors to try to change companies from within so that the companies can reflect their personal values and do what they wish for society. So those are the four elements of the socially responsible investing, and the Social Investment Forum attempted to find all kinds of money managers and institutional money and professionals throughout the country who were using investment dollars to target any one of these spokes of the wheel. Hmm.
I'm interested in a couple of these, and say, for example, the first one of these legs, the idea that in their investing, there are some things that some people would like to avoid, and there may be some number of things. For example, some people would not want to invest in tobacco companies. Maybe some people would not want to invest in nuclear power, or anybody who's in the business of producing, generating hazardous waste, things like that.
Or genetically engineered foods, or polluters, or people who are operating sweatshops and buying products from sweatshops and the like. Yes.
And I guess I was interested in whether there is some sort of consistent thread that runs through the reasons that people would want to avoid certain things.
Basically, we tell people in our lectures, in our work, in our writing, that the individual person who's investing has the obligation to look within themselves to find out what their own values are. Because there are no two people alike, they're just like fingerprints, and they should select the issues of which are important to them and then tailor their investments accordingly. There are some people who will have no stance, for example, on gambling. They think gambling is fine, but there are some religious people who think that gambling should not be even allowed to be operated in the United States, and people should not be participating. Tobacco is a classic, and that one is a very universally followed screen because of the ills of the tobacco and the illnesses which follow. But basically, people should be inventorying, and they can inventory on animal rights and human rights and environmental issues. There are even mutual funds now which are select out on gay rights and so on, women's rights, minority rights. And so you can screen out companies that violate the rights that you follow. And the other side of the coin, the mirror image of that, is then when you've identified the issues which are burning to you or important to you, then use the affirmative screening to put into your portfolios to support the issues. And by the way, both of those work hand in hand, and there's total evidence that you do not influence, you do not result in lower financial returns by taking this step.
And that's maybe here we talk a little bit more about that. That is an important bottom line for you and a bottom line for a lot of folks. I think that there maybe in a lot of people's minds they have this idea that says that for me to have my investment decisions be consistent with my social values, I have to be willing to accept a lower rate of return. And it seems as if what you were saying is that that's not true. You do not have to accept a lower rate of return.
No, on the contrary, we have specific supporting evidence to show that people who apply their values to their investments along the issues that are generally in the industry, for example, anti-tobacco, war, gambling, the human rights, environmental rights, environmental cleanliness, and this kind of thing, are actually making more money and have been over the last 10-year run-up in the market. The Domini Social Index, which was developed in 1990 by KLD, which is Kindle, Leidenberg, and Domini, and which has manifested itself in a mutual fund called the Domini Social Equity Fund, has found that from its inception, it has outperformed the S&P 500 by approximately 100% or a couple of percent per year. The latest figure I have, for example, on a 10-year return on the Domini as of September 30th, I don't have the year end at this point, was 21.25% per year. Vice people in the S&P 500, which have only returned 19.5% per year. And further evidence, for over 7 years, from 1993 through the middle of 2000, I was participating in a New York Times study presenting a model portfolio of socially screened mutual funds on a quarterly basis. And my portfolio at the end of the study, which was over in July of this year, this past year, I was amongst the top performing mutual funds, returning 17% per year, where the top portfolio only got 17.45%, but the fourth and fifth place players were only returning 13 and 12% per year. Interestingly enough, the one that dropped from my 17 to the 13% was a portfolio supported by Morningstar research analysts, and they have access to every mutual fund in the world, and their portfolio underperformed mine by 4% per year. So it was a very, very gratifying experience for me, but another validation that you do not give up performance when you do social screening.
Mm. Well, here, that naturally invites the question, when you look at the mix of stocks that you're picking, obviously you're doing something right. Either you're avoiding companies that are trouble, or you've got the ones that are growing and doing well, or maybe some of both. When you look at the kind of profile of the choices in a fund that in one of these socially screened funds, and you compare that basically to the S&P 500, which is just the 500 biggest companies, what are the differences in terms of specifically the stocks that make up the fund?
One of the areas that are different. There was in the S&P 500, besides having some tobacco companies and having companies that are typical manufacturing companies that may be polluters and whatever, is that the socially screened fund, the Domini, has screened out most beside the tobacco companies. They also have screened out what we consider the vertical oil companies and the largest mining companies in the world and this kind of thing. And in doing so, that has not been as big an importance as the fact that what was put back into the Domini to come up with 400 companies were the companies that had superlative records in terms of labor relations, and also added a little bit higher torquing towards the technology companies, but they also introduced some up-and-coming technology companies, and that were really, really in the spotlight and the forefront of the leadership of the stock market during that 10-year period. At this moment, the Domini is slightly lagging the S&P 500 for the same reason, because they have some technology stocks in it, but it's still ahead of the S&P 500 on the 10-year period. I would likely to think that most likely in the long term, coming up in the next 2 or 3 years, that the Domini will just go right down the line, almost on a direct line with the S&P 500, which is wonderful, because it has selected out companies which are excellent in terms of labor relations, excellent in terms of solutions to pollution, and excellent in terms of being responsible stewards to Earth and to people overall.
Let me introduce our guest again, and we've got a caller we'll get right to. We're talking with Jack Brill. He's a registered investment advisor, one of the founders of Natural Investment Services, and one of the authors of the book, Investing with Your Values, Making Money and Making a Difference. That's the subtitle. It's now available in an updated edition. It's paperback, published by New Society Publishers. If you're interested, you can seek it out. And, of course, if you have questions, you can call and talk with our guest. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Here is a caller in Urbana, and it's line one.
Good morning. I heard you say that one does not have to give up value in order to, or return in order to have our investments socially restrained, I would say. Now, I have three questions going from that. Number one, in order to get the information that an investor needs, is it necessary then to buy a mutual fund or have a broker help the investor, or can the investor ferret out that information? Two, second question, there are many different social issues and I'm concerned about whether certain social issues will be utilized in determining what to invest in, and those social issues might not be as evenly remunerative as some of the broader, like tobacco, like oil, so forth, would be. And so I'm concerned about a blanket statement which says that, quote, which you haven't said, vote your social issues with your investment funds and you will get an okay return. So the question there is, and I'm really asking in a in a directed way, wouldn't there be some social issues that would be more advantageous to invest in than others, and therefore don't we need to be pretty savvy about what those areas are? And then three, if an investor can do this, you know, how does the investor get that information? And I'll hang up and listen.
Okay, good. Let's start with the first point that was raised on mutual fund advisors' individual investing. The most, the easiest way for investors to be socially screened is through the mutual fund industry. There are some 51 socially screened mutual funds which we have profiled in the book, and there are hundreds of others by their portfolio, by our research that we have shown are satisfactory to socially responsible investors, natural investors. That is the best way, and by the way, one of the best resources, by using the screening, for example, of the Calvert Mutual Fund, the Domini Mutual Fund, the Citizens Funds, which are, and the stocks are available on the websites of the various mutual funds. The investor can have a lot of research done for them in the selection of their stock. The mutual funds are generally the best place because that's where the best research compared to the individual investor trying to invest in individual companies. Going to the standard broker in the industry, out of the standard brokerage industry, Merrill Lynch, or any of the, what we call the wirehouses, you have to find the individual broker in that office that understands and specializes and works with clients who are socially responsible. Most of the brokers in the industry do have access to some of the mutual funds and the information, but do not specialize or work with the industry. And we advocate those who are serious about their socially responsible investing, their natural investing, to locate a broker, whether it's local or financial planner, whether it's local or throughout the anywhere in the United States that can service remotely like we do our clients, to do so. And there's a listing in the Social Investment Forum in the Green Pages of hundreds and hundreds of professionals who specialize in the field of socially responsible investing. Now, as far as the selection of stocks, again, the investor must inventory their own mind and their own body and their own soul and their own spirit and come up with the list of issues which are most important to them and then work with that. And they should, and they really should. There is no reason today not to select the stocks and the companies and the industries that you wish to be invested in and screen out those you do not want any part of, particularly those who have religious feelings, such as the Christian Scientists, who do not want anything to do with the medical profession, should never be invested in, for example, a drug or pharmaceutical company or an HMO. And so that issue is easy, and there is so much research. We on our website have listed companies which have been screened, hundreds of them, and there's enough diversification now in the listings that a person will not be hurt and will be able to diversify their portfolio sufficiently. Researching individual companies by the individual investor gets a little bit more detailed, and for that there are specialized sources. Again, it is best for the individual investors to work against the mutual funds such as the Domini Social Equity Fund, the Citizens Index Fund, the new Calvert Social Index Fund, and find the companies which have been screened and work from those lists. And from there, you've got some very, very good start.
The listener ask another question. And if I understood what she was asking, it was something like this: when you set up your screen, when you set up your principles of what it is I want to invest in, what I want to avoid, from person to person, the concerns are obviously going to be different. And so what is socially responsible to one person might be different from another. Given that fact, then when you then ask the question, well, are there some, if I want to get the highest return I possibly can, and at the same time, you know, have my philosophy reflected, there still will be some, you know, how do I decide which choices are better than others?
Okay, well, basically the individual is going to have to make some trade-offs because there is no perfect company. In corporate world, there is no perfect company. The company may be great on human rights and on the environment, but may have an issue, some part of its makeup that it's abhorrent. So there's going to be there. You have to make trade-offs. We tell our investors that you will come, after you make up your list of social screens that are important to you, you will have to make off some trade-offs in the gray areas and invest in a company that may have some issues that you do not want, but they're not as important in your total outlook of what you want your life to be. You want your portfolio to reflect who you are as close as you can, but you will not get 100% mirror image.
I was really struck by your comment on the number of socially responsible mutual funds that now exist. I'll bet that 20 years ago, there weren't more than a handful.
Yeah, tell me about it. I've been following this industry since 1985, when there were only something like five mutual funds. When I wrote my first book, Investing from the Heart, in 1990, there were only 12. I've now got 51, and I have to put an amendment on our website. We have something like 8 new mutual funds which have come in since we researched the book from last year. It's wonderful that the world is understanding that there are people who really care about their social issues and really want them reflected in their portfolio, and the industry is responding by providing the mutual funds and providing additional research facility and resources.
Well, have most of these been created by large companies that were already in the mutual fund business who looked out there and said, hey, we got some investors here who are interested in making these kind of choices, and we could get their business if we created a fund that would address those concerns?
No, some of them are individually owned. There's a women's equity fund, which specializes in looking at women's issues. There's a DEM fund owned by a black man, I think his name is Nathan, who's created a list of small firms owned by racial minorities, Latinos, blacks, women, and so on, and has created a portfolio and invested in those companies and has done very well. There's a fund, the American Allegiance Fund, which was created strictly for the Christian Science community. There's a fund, the Myers Pride Fund, which was created in positive attitudes and their positive written policies towards gays and lesbians. So there are individual funds as well as the traditional players who have been participating in this industry for years. The Citizens Funds, which was Sophia Collier, started from the Working Assets Group several years ago and now created a whole family of funds. So it's actually been slower. The big guys like Vanguard just joined the bandwagon by coming on with Calvert to create a Vanguard Social Index, and they've asked Calvert to create the screens, and they're marketing the one product through Vanguard through the institutional market, and the same list is being used by Calvert, that's been in the business since the mid-1980s, to the public. So it's not been the big guys. It's been primarily independent entrepreneurs like Bridgeway, John Montgomery, and the Bridgeway Funds, who have felt that the compelling desire to create the funds and merchandise them and get the word out to the public.
We talked a little bit ago about the fact that over 10 years, these socially responsible funds have outperformed the S&P 500, but that just recently they've started to lag because they do invest in technology stocks and the technology sector has not been doing well. Supposing that we do get a big turnaround in the market and the bears do in fact take over, will these funds continue to do as well as they have in the past, and might we then get into a long period of time when they would not perform as well as they have?
Well, one of the things we must point out is that for any investor to protect their assets on a good in a bull market or a bear market, they need to be well diversified. You cannot ever rely on being in an individual stock. Lo and behold, the person who now is relying solely on AT&T, for example, stock, for years and years and years and years, the most precious stock for widows and orphans, the most defensive stock, they never would fail you, and now AT&T is down like 60% in value and has just cut their dividends. Never, ever allow an investor to think even about being in a single stock or in a single venue in the market. It is dangerous. Also, never try to time the market to try and figure out when the ups and the downs and when to get in and out. Have to take a long-term perspective. And so the investor, to be properly invested, has to be diversified. And that's where we create a portfolio, and people should create a portfolio for themselves of having their investments in different venues in a market. And they can do this socially responsibly. They can be in large cap and small cap and mid cap and technology and utilities and specialized industries, index funds and the like, and they should have a good mix of all of these things. And with that, they will definitely protect themselves on the downside and definitely participate on the upside. So since there are enough socially responsible mutual funds and there is enough socially responsible stock, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds to select from, the investor who watches this aspect of their portfolio will come out okay.
In this hour of Focus 580, we're talking with Jack Brill. He's a registered investment advisor. He's co-founder of Natural Investment Services and one of the authors of the book Investing with Your Values. It's published by New Society Publishers. If you're interested in reading on the subject, and questions are welcome, 333-9455. That's for Champaign Urbana folks. And we also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us. If it would be a long-distance call, use that. That's 800-222-9455. Our next caller is in Champaign, and that's line one. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
I'm extremely unlearned about investing. So I guess my question is do these mutual funds that are socially conscious actually do a lot of investigation on these companies? Obviously, you know, they're obviously like oil companies won't do well, but these lesser-known companies, do they get thoroughly investigated?
The answer is absolutely.
Okay.
Before a company can be included in the socially screened mutual fund, significant research is done both financially and socially.
Okay.
The companies are contacted, the questionnaires go out, research facilities such as KLD, which is Kinder, Leidenberg, and Domini, and others who provide research for a fee to some of the socially responsible mutual funds, go out and visit the sites. And when there's a concern that's raised because of some new information about an environmental issue or a sweatshop issue or whatever, when the Domini organization calls the company and says, we are concerned, they get an answer back from the president of the firm directly, because they know that with a mutual fund that has $2 billion worth of assets plus has impact on several other $1 billion worth of investments, that they know that bad publicity can really bring down the price of the stock. So, yes, the companies that do the social research in the social funds do an impeccable job of researching the companies they select, and it is not just for social issues. They do the financial checkups the same as any other mutual fund.
Well, it's great that the mutual funds are growing in this area, but have other companies or have more companies started to become more socially conscious as a result?
A lot of companies, well, let's take the evidence that at least publicly that major corporations do know now that the public is really concerned about what they're doing and their impact on the environment and on the employment issues. Take, for example, the latest round of publicity from British Petroleum that is going out of its way, actually, to do research in solar and alternative energies, falling in the face of other oil companies which have given up those industries and have just sat and were hiding in their boardrooms and not trying to do anything about it. So, yes, there is a great concern. Home Depot, after several years of fighting the industry through the social advocacy, through shareholder activism, which was resistant to doing things, finally realized with the number of people showing up in their annual meetings that they had to do something and now have a very strong policy on selling lumber that will come from only new growth and sustainable forests, not from old growth kinds of things. And when companies get lawsuits for discrimination suits, like Texaco did several years ago, they know that the public will react and their sales actually go down. Genetic engineering has had that happen to many of the food stock. And so the companies, yes, are becoming to take a look at a posture of really taking a hard look at becoming more socially responsible and more responsive to the needs of the environment and the earth. Yes, they are.
Well, thanks very much.
All right. Thank you for the call. Let's go to Chicago for someone else right here. Line 4. Hello. The caller there in Chicago,
oh,
line
yes.
4?
Yes. We're talking about locally.
Yes.
George Soros recently spoke at the Council on Foreign Relations here in Chicago about what he envisions as an open society in which investment will be paramount for the development of different regions of the world. And since there's an area of investment where a small percentage of people own the great majority of stocks and financial issues, I was wondering what you thought about the people that have accumulated so much wealth and position, including the banks themselves, which are looking for investments, are just going ahead blatantly investing in areas of the third world and just doing as they wish to do and could, in essence, bring down many economies at the same time while they're attempting to build them up. And in contrast to the good things that you're suggesting with your book and the commentary so far, I was just wondering what you thought about that area of wealth. Like, for instance, in the area of derivatives, there's $150 trillion or more invested in that, which is like a very shaky house of cards, which could come tumbling down at any time. And I'd just like to hear some comments you have along those lines.
Basically, like, we cannot argue that the world of greed and the world of short-term profits and the international movement of money is a powerful force. What we're arguing and what we're commenting on through socially responsible investing is that by the growth of the industry, that institutions, many large institutions and public pension funds, are now taking a stance that they must do things socially responsible. We need to do more work in that area, and that is why we need to develop and a larger mass, and we'll probably never be the majority. The socially responsible money will probably never be the majority of the investment world. However, you can, I think, see some positive signs, such as the reaction to WTO in Seattle and in
yes.
Prague, of the public that is standing up against globalization and is telling the free trade people, the free trade at any cost and at any human cost and environmental cost, hey guys, you got to change your ways. And I think that is happening.
I'd like to hear you say that, and I appreciate your views. Thank you.
All right. Well, I thank you very much for the call, and others are welcome. 333-WILL, toll-free, 800-222-WILL. Back at the beginning, we were sort of talking about what socially responsible investing is, or the term that you like, natural investing, and you talked about the fact that it effectively stands on these four legs, being that part of it is avoiding investing in things that you don't believe in. Another is investing in things you do believe in. I'm interested in hearing you talk a little bit about one of these, and that is the shareholder activism. And you know, I ask the question just because it's my sort of understanding that sometimes it can be very difficult for people who hold a smaller number of shares to have their concerns heard, as opposed to people who maybe hold thousands and thousands and thousands of shares in a particular company.
Well, the greatest thrust in that area is the fact that people are combining, the socially responsible investors are combining in developing shareholder resolutions through the ICCR, the Interfaith Council for Corporate Responsibility, and other organizations, are co-sponsoring shareholder resolutions and getting investors who are stockholders to join in and become part of the vote. And they sometimes don't get, they never will get a majority of the vote on these shareholder resolutions. But when 13% of the shareholders vote on an issue, which has happened in a couple of the major companies in the last few years, by this combined effort and the coordinated effort, that has been the greatest importance of growth of the shareholder activism movement.
We have another caller back here locally. This is Urbana. It's line one. Hello.
Hello. Yes, I would like to know if there are any sources of information, for example, on the web, that would have information for an investor regarding, like, individual stocks as to how well they are on social issues.
Well, the answer is that one of the reasons, and I'm not trying just to plug the book, but one of the reasons we put the book together was we had found that there is a limited amount of resources to the individual investor. So what we have done is compiled lists of the kinds of companies, the industries they're in, the guys who are on the good list, the bad list, the kinds of stocks, so that you can match your issues against the stocks in the various kinds of cross references. It's a little hard to come by to the average investor. That is one of the shortfalls of being an individual investor in individual stocks. The individual investor in individual stocks best compared to have the social research and use the annual reports from the mutual funds to see if their companies appear and the industries they're in and then the companies appear as being selected and being put in the portfolio. I would like to add that our critics say that when you screen out companies for this, that, and the other thing, you limit your opportunities for investment, and there you shorten your list of the things you would invest in. And our answer is, screening is a natural thing, just like investing to make for a better world is natural, and everybody really wants to have a better world. And by using the screening out, you actually reduce your choices, so much of the work has been done for you, and you have a good the remaining list is very valuable and very useful and very diversified.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, and thank you. And again, we have about 10 minutes left here. Other questions are welcome. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Our guest is Jack Brill. He's a registered investment advisor. He's one of the authors of the book that we've mentioned, Investing with Your Values, published by New Society Publishers, a good source of information on socially responsible investing. You're thinking about that. You want to learn more about it. That's one place that you can go. And, of course, again, questions are welcome. 333-WILL, toll-free, 800-222-WILL. The fourth, we talked a little bit a moment ago about shareholder activism. And in addition to deciding you do want to invest in some things and you don't in others, as being three of these four legs, the other is community investing. And I'm also interested in having you talk about that simply because it seems to be, if you decided that you were going to do this and you want to invest in businesses in your community, they're not going to be, a lot of them I would imagine are not going to be listed on the New York Stock Exchange. You're not going to be able to invest in them that way by buying stock. How do you go about doing that?
Well, basically, what we encourage our investors to do is to think about putting 1% per year or more and getting the money into institutions, credit unions, special banks, and so on. The South Shore Bank in Chicago, particularly, is one that we talk about a whole lot. And getting money into the communities so that the small companies and mom and pop store owners and people with ideas for new industries who can't raise their capital and people who want to rebuild their community for the housing to get rid of slums and the like, get the money they need, which they do not normally get through the lending institutions if they haven't built the credit worthiness. And so getting the money back into the community is basically done through that kind of institution, the self-help credit union in North Carolina, the South Shore Bank that has done so well. And that gets money into small business people's hands, which creates local capitalism. And it is not a stock play, usually, for being in community investing. That is just a natural part of using the money that you have earned and getting the money to work in the most possible way, in the best possible way, when the adage of think globally but act locally. And that is where the community investing has its strongest point. And to strengthen that issue, for example, the Calvert funds designate approximately 1-3% of their investment dollars and target investments in these banking institutions and in small companies who are coming up and become the venture capitalists for startup companies to do that kind of work. And we think it's a very significant part of the social investment movement, and therefore we've included that as one of the spokes of the wheel of the natural investing wheel, which is the four spokes, one of the four legs we've talked about.
Mm-hmm. We have another caller to talk with. This is someone in Bloomington. It's on line number four. Hello.
Hello. Yes, I'd just like to ask some broader questions about this. Isn't there something narcissistic about investing, even if it's socially responsible, in something that you are the ultimate profit gainer in? Secondly, isn't there something troubling about a vague term like social responsibility? When is it really up to each individual to just decide, or is there some kind of a sense of society and politics that really underlies this? I mean, I take it wouldn't be socially responsible to invest in hate organizations or this sort of thing, but so is it really just up to the individual? And finally, if we're going to be doing this thing and making money off of it, isn't it best to find places where we can make the most money? Golf, for example, Sierra Club had its major part of its portfolio in Gulf Oil, and argued that that at the time was where they could make the biggest bang for their buck, and that they could use it. So it's the use of the money, the use of the profits, that's important, not the making of it.
Let me answer that one real quickly. I think it is totally illogical and ridiculous for a person to say, make the most money you can and donate to your favorite charity or cause. It is impossible for me to think, because when you're a stockholder, you're actually a cheerleader for the company. You want that company to make money. And if they're doing something that you don't want being done, you don't want any part of that company. You don't. If you lost somebody to lung cancer, to tobacco, the last thing you want to do is see Philip Morris profit and perpetuate itself and perpetuate its business in tobacco. And it's not necessary. All you have to do is you can find equal or better companies that are satisfactory to you and then are within your context of what you socially believe in, and then also use the profit to then support the organization. And then you have a double bottom line. You have the great satisfaction of supporting a company or industry or helping a company industry and buying their product that you really love, like Whole Foods companies, for example, who has satisfied themselves by opening natural food markets throughout the United States. Doesn't it feel great to profit Whole Foods and then take the profit from that company and then invest in, say, and say the Sierra Club?
Is feeling great really the standard here, or are we simply perpetuating in a very minor way, of course, and maybe ineffectual way, a system that's designed primarily to make profits?
Yes, it's designed to make profit, and it goes with the human feeling. I think it's the human nature to want to profit and want to. I think it's natural, and that's why we call our work natural investing, for people to participate in the system because that's the only system that there is. Should we avoid the system, and where do we put our money? Stick your money in dollar bills in your backyard in a steel box and try to avoid the world? No. You must be participating in the system in order to support your family. It's natural. You want a better life for your children. You want to be able to retire in the future. And the system that is working is the capitalistic system as we know it, as exemplified by the New York and the American and the NASDAQ exchange in the United States. So participation, I think, is natural and is okay. If it's not okay for you, don't do it.
Isn't it better to have participation in a much more sensible way, and that is a political social participation where you are organizing politically, and that's where you spend your time, money, and efforts is in that.
Yeah, do that, but you have to have money to do that. Any political organization requires organization and money, and the money is going to come. And the money is the ultimate source of the money is going to come out of, number one, working for a living. Number two, and taking that money and investing a portion of your future and taking the profits and pouring it back to your political or your social issues through social advocacy. But I don't think you can separate the two.
We are going to have to stop there because we're at the end of the time. We want to say, Mr. Brill, thanks very much for talking with us.
Yeah, when we get off the air, I'll post my 800 number and website, so if any of your callers want to call in, I'll be very happy to participate further.
All right. And again, our guest, Jack Brill, he's a registered investment advisor. He's co-founder of Natural Investment Services. And if you're interested in reading more on the subject, you can look for the book that he co-authored. It's titled Investing with Your Values. And it's published by New Society Publishers.